You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
take a look at yourself, yeah. Get some people.
Where do you want to be?
Where you want to be?
What your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Get some people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yeah. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't, you got it done anyway. And we appreciate you that for it. And also, too, I know you remain safe. You had your mask on anytime you walk out the door. You had your mask on and you kept your distance and you washed your hands. You did everything that you needed to do to stay safe because Rona's out there raging. It's particularly if you're in the, well, really everywhere. Everywhere. Except on the continent. Ain't that deep? North Africa, pretty much, and South Africa, you know, must have something to do with them Caucasians in South Africa. You know what I'm saying? That's something to do with them Caucasians everywhere. That's why this country and Europe is raging. But, of course, it is affecting us most adversely because just that's how it goes. You're listening to the African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. And there will be programs that are dated and titled for your informational and listening pleasure. Other program we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, African Perspectives. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, of course, this program from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. This evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad Ahmed. Followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Cambon and her daughter, Sister Nataki Cambon. And then Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, after 7 with host Shani B. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk on Saturdays at from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council with host Alfonso Watkins. And on Sunday, if it's 7 p.m. on Sunday, once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We by Black. We Buy Black. Get everything you need from the largest online marketplace is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Go to their website, donate. They're trying to develop a supermarket here that would have produce from our farmers, brothers and sisters who are in all the products, trying to be all the products that we have to sell. We need this, but we just don't need to say, let Atlanta just be the first one, but we need this.
We need this all over. We need this all over the country. That's right, in every major city. And not just one. We need a multiple. So let's make it happen, y'all. We can do it. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani Tayemba. He is ready to take our people this week. This week they're going. They're going to Tanzania November 20th through the 30th. November 20th through the 30th, going to Tanzania. And the trip is on. It's going to be beautiful. And In fact, he has a trip to South Africa next year around the same time, November 19th through the 29th. And instead of going to South Africa, he's going to Tanzania, and I'm going. Yes, I'm going to commit myself, save my money, make a down payment, putting stuff on it. So I want to go to Tanzania. I want to see things for myself. The trip to Ghana is still on, he told me, December 24th to January 5th. When he comes back from Tanzania, we'll have a conversation with Brother Bomani Tayemba, and we'll explain to you what's on the YouTube page, all the photos he's going to take. Because if you're looking for photos or videos, photos on Facebook.com/Bomani photos. Facebook.com/Bomani. Videos on YouTube.com/Bomani2007. And that's what I'm talking about, the videos that are coming up. Also to the Senegal and Gambia, April 2nd through the 12th next year. And once again, Ghana, May 24th through June 4th. And, of course, once again, Tanzania. And everything is that you need is on the website. So go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Renoko Rashidi. Renoko changed his program from January 21st. Through February 4th, it is now October 5th through the 16th, going to Uganda and Rwanda, October 5th through the 16th, okay? Habesha Incorporated.org. Brothers and sisters, they are doing the work. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org, helping Africans establishing schools at home and abroad. That's what they're about, the educating of our people. You know, they got the Kashi Project that is doing great things and building in Ghana, the Kashi Project. They have all kinds of good stuff. Habesha is just beautiful. Just beautiful. The work that they're doing. You know, their mission, of course, is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. Habesha Incorporated. They got the Habesha Works Program, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds and the Golden Growers, and Urban Green Jobs. Check it out. The Ledge Group, land for the environmental development of group economics. The Ledge Group. Go to their website. Also to the Grand Rising on Facebook. Check it out. Just put in Grand Rising in the search on Facebook. I'll go there and then become a sustainable person, a member of the Ledge Group. The Ledge Group. Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta. I'm Ralph Dibbitt Abernathy, right across the street from Soul Veg, down the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which will be open toward the end of this month. It'll be open on Fridays and Saturdays. So you can pick up your Kwanzaa kits, you can pick up books, you can pick up gifts and so forth. They'll be open. I'll get to the exact times that the Shrine of the Black Madonna will be open for you to purchase gifts. So the Meddu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Meddu Bookstore, located in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. And they have a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, figurines, you name it. They have it. Please go check her out in the Greenbrier Mall. Give her a call. Also, too, because MD Ajamu, Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, he has a coffee bar now serving delicious Cameroon boil, my favorite. So give Brother Gazimde Ajamu a call at 404-519-8107. That's 404-519-8107. Because there is light in the Black Dot, brothers and sisters. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us Lifting Us, that Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night from 9 to 10 on blogtalkradio.com, blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. That's Us Lifting Us every Thursday night. You can call to listen, or you can call to listen and make comments, questions, or concern at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. That's Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Us Lifting Us. Sanjay Dash Aidi, my sister Gabrielle, send me some more pictures. I tell you, there's beautiful pictures, too, of the young people, the students there, and the work that they're doing. That is just fabulous. They deserve to be supported. Go online to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E, dash, Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay, dash, Haiti. Akabin Institute. Brother Baba Baruti and Mama Ya Baruti, outstanding job of educating our young warriors. So they deserve to be supported. So make your check or money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. You can use Cash App and PayPal. For Cash App, $YAMBARUTI. Constant contributions. They're so desperately needed to support the good things that our people are doing. Also, too, I don't know if they were at the Abacus and Tsum Tsum. Saw a picture because Brother Molly Davis posted a picture of him and Mama Marimba. But I heard it was great. I heard it had a good crowd. You know, in spite of the coronavirus, it's great. I love Abacus and Tsum Tsum. Yeah. You know, I'm just going to be real. I guess because I know that with my health situation, I would love to been at Bacchus and Tsum Tsum. I missed it one time since I've been here. I've been here 6 years. That's because I was out of town, you know. But if I was in town, but I just can't. I guess I'm saying I just can't chance it out there. I go out there, put my mask on, do my business, come right back home, you know. Just because, you know, I've had pneumonia so many times. I had a heart attack. And so I can't mess around. You know what I'm saying? Y'all understand. And I talked to Marimba last week, and I know she understands. She told me, you don't need to be coming here, you know, because you don't know. You know, you don't know. But it's great. It's a great turnout. It's beautiful. And that's great. African spiritual warfare, Abacus and Tsum Tsum. It's just beautiful. Okay. The NYSASIM of Daily Revolutionary Thought. November 15th. Always in the presence of color, whites will feel genetically inferior. Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. The politics of inclusion are simply strategic efforts to co-opt and absorb competing interpretations of reality while Europeans remain supreme in their control of all real forms of power at the cultural and societal levels. In what fundamentally remains a monocultural supremacist reality, inclusion is simply an illusion designed to fragment and dissipate the anger that erupts when the dispossessed learn that they are purposefully dispossessed, and that they have been systematically lied to in a conscious effort to conceal this fact from them. Those in control accept difference long enough to diffuse the rage, creating and upholding all other lies that support it. In this way, Europeans never have to admit that they are absolutely wrong or lose their erroneous claims to supremacy. The reality absorbs those truths that are not too troublesome for it to handle and smothers them into oblivion. Affirm, I do not play with others' politics of inclusion. Affirm, I do not play with others' politics of inclusion. November 16th. To rob people or countries of their names is to set in motion a psychic disturbance that can, and in turn, create a permanent crisis of identity. Warren Cruz. Miseducation is virtually unavoidable without a conscious awareness of the pervasiveness and intent of the assault. Simply saying the names of the streets we walk on, the cities and the states we live in, the schools we attend, the currency we use, the cars we drive, the clothes we wear, the food we eat, the days of the week, the names of the months, planets, galaxies, and even the creator. The word God, etymology, in all intents and purposes, is European in origin. As well as the names that's why I like Olodumare. I think that's a great name for the all, for God, for the all-seeing, all-knowing entity, Olodumare. In all intents and purposes, being European in origin, as well as the names we answer to, gives Urugu power over our minds by invoking the names of its families, its traditions, its historical truths and heroes. Without preparation and constant vigilance, the European view is already locked in. And once this occurs, the struggle to break free from European thinking, Eurocentric thinking, becomes too fearful and or too much work for most of us to bear. Affirm, I watch my words. Affirm, I watch my words. That's why I had that piece some time ago on words. Words have meaning. A person expresses a word, an image is conjured up. Words have meanings. Yes, they do. Kwame Nkrumah said this, as we're going to talk today about the OAU, the AU, the OAAU, and all other organizing efforts of our people and the plots against them. He said this a few years after Ghana gained its independence from the colonizers, from Great Britain. Ugh. He said, I believe strongly and sincerely that that with deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture united under one federal government will emerge not just as another world bloc to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear, envy, and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind. Unfortunately, he said this some years later, if we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling amongst ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we have suffered heretofore. Yeah. Yep. That's what happened. So we need to be truly liberated. African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effects that the European has had on our ability to think victoriously. Our thoughts from European. So we must be able to separate our thoughts from Europeans' thoughts so as to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europeans. This is a demand by an African-centered worldview. Because why? Because we are Africans. And because the future that European leads us is genocide. That's just how a fact. That's what we have to deal with, is genocide in its very nature. You know, I know a lot of times the people don't want to agree that we have an enemy. You know, that there are enemies out there. No, brothers and sisters, we have sworn open enemies. Sworn open enemies. And yet, all we are constantly trying to do is beg and plead. I mean, to me, it was sickening this a couple of weeks ago, all these cats crying because Joe Biden won and evil-ass Trump is out the way, so to speak. No, evil-ass Trump ain't out the way. Yes, him as a person, but evil-ass Trump mindset will never be out the way, because that's what this is. We're going to talk today about the AU, the OAU, you know, the OAAU, and COINTELPRO. The rise and the fall of the most powerful organization in history, in African history, was the Organization of African Unity. Once again, this is from Pan-African Alliance, coming out of October 13th of this year. For nearly 40 years, the Organization for African Unity, the OAU, stood as the best hope for a political unified Africa. Founded on May 25th, that's why we celebrate African Independence Day, May 25th. That day should be celebrated globally for African people. That, you know, I wish we would put serious emphasis on that day, you know, as opposed to Juneteenth Day. Damn Juneteenth Day. You know, when the crackers got 2.5 more years of work out of us, you know, when they finally came down into Galveston, Texas and said, hey, y'all, stop working, man. Y'all been so-called emancipated, so-called free. You know, I don't want to celebrate that. I want to celebrate the awakening of African people globally. That's what I want to celebrate. So to me, African Liberation Day, May 25th is a day that we need to seriously. And if I had the money, I'd make it big. Man, well, that's hope. It's always a hope. But then again, let's always try to work towards that. Founded on May 25th in 1963 by Kwame Nkrumah, the Organization of African Unity promoted the unity and solidarity of African states, defended the interests of independent African countries, and helped to liberate those nations which were still colonized by Western powers, all while remaining neutral in terms of world affairs to prevent its members from being controlled once more by outside powers. The power and influence of the organization and its leaders expanded from its birthplace and into the furthest African enclaves, from Addis Ababa to Atlanta, Georgia, until the organization evolved into its present incarnation called African Union, the AU. The early history of the African Organization of African Unity. President Kwame Nkrumah entered the office of Prime Minister of Ghana in 1953, 4 years before the liberation of Ghana. He took office. Nkrumah made three promises to his people and the world. Number one, that he would learn to govern effectively. Number two, that he would unify Ghana. At the time, Ghana was divided into four territories. And number three, that he would liberate Ghana from colonial control. At the time of his election, Ghana was still in control by the British. Nkrumah was no doubt an inspirational figure, a magnificent speaker, and a visionary, but the challenges that he faced were his lack of knowledge relative to governing a divided country, the strength of his colonial colonizers, and the tribal divisions that kept his new nation separated. Within 10 years, Kwame Nkrumah had achieved all three goals, realizing the success of his governing principles and the potential of a Pan-African Union. Nkrumah expanded his philosophy of Ghanaian unity to the entire continent of Africa. Every African nation that achieved independence wanted closer ties with other African nations to both improve their ability to sustain themselves via trade and commerce and to reduce the likelihood of further exploitation. And you see, they have a picture of many of the African leaders at that time with Jomo Kenyatta and Emperor Haile Selassie, Kenneth Kaunda, Patrice Lumumba. Oh, man, it's just beautiful. On March 6, 1960, Nkrumah announced plans for a new and unusual Ghanaian constitution. In it, Nkrumah proposed that Ghana become a republic and would operate as such until the foundation of an African, a unified Africa, a union of African states, at which time Ghana would surrender its sovereignty. He's willing to render Ghana's sovereignty if Africa could unite. And that's what needs to happen. All those countries must surrender their sovereignty to one African nation. And what organization is helping them to do that? The Pan-African Federalist Movement. This was an incredible concept. Kwame Nkrumah was so committed to this vision of a free and redeemed Africa that he was willing to subordinate his position in his entire nation to achieve it. And he wasn't the only one. Rastafari, Emperor Haile Selassie, joined Nkrumah in an effort to establish an African empire. Haile Selassie believed the economic cooperation versus political unity would be made more effective and realistic, but agreed to mediate both sides of the debate and assist Nkrumah in establishing of the Organization of African Unity. The organization became active May 25th, 1963, and it's headquartered in Ethiopia, in Addis Ababa. The charter of the organization was signed by 32 independent African states. Emperor Haile Selassie served as both the very first and fifth head of the Organization of African Unity, a position that would later also be held by Julius Nyerere, Idi Amin Dada, Robert Mugabe, the old lion, and of course, Muammar Gaddafi, the time that he was assassinated by America, the West. Well, the Organization of African Unity got it right, and where it went wrong. From the very beginning, the Organization of African Unity, the OAU, was a political and economic organization. This was its first problem. The primary failure of the Organization of African Unity was a lack of a standing military. When you make a claim like that, you got to defend that. And we couldn't do it. From the very beginning, the OAU was a political and economic organization, and this was its first problem. Today, the United Nations have proven to be a capable organization only because they are able to carry out mandates with the forms of arms. The OAU had no such force to back its resolutions. As a result, the organization was helpless to do all but decry the civil wars in Nigeria, in Sierra Leone, in Liberia, the human rights violations of many of the continent's dictators who were also members of the organization, and the genocides that were carried out from time to time in member nations, including the genocide in Rwanda. It's a sad picture they have here showing all the brothers and sisters' bodies laying in them on top of the hill to be covered up, man. Without force of arms, the OAU was more of a think tank and a talk shop than an actual effective organization. While the vision of the organization was noble, no vision can be achieved in the face of violent opposition without a righteous application of force. Any further organization that should come hereafter would do well to remember that lesson. Ashe. Aside from this one failure, the OAU did succeed in unifying Africa to an extent. This is an achievement that few other organizations can claim. By the time that the OAU was transformed into the African Union, 53 out of 54 African nations had joined. And even without a standing military, according to the source, the OAU played a vital role in freeing African nations from colonialism by supplying weapons, training, and military bases to colonized nations fighting for independence. South Africa's ANC, Zimbabwe's ZANU and ZAPU, ZANU and ZAPO, were all successful due to the support of the OAU. In fact, when Caucasians in South Africa refused to abolish apartheid, their harbors were closed, that's why they had a blockade on them. They were expelled from the World Health Organization, and South African aircraft were prohibited from flying over the rest of the continent, all thanks to the OAU. The OAU also had established the African Development Bank, Africa's answer to European World Bank. The bank still exists today and makes loans, provides technical assistance, coordinates the development of regional member countries. The OAU also founded a number of specialized agencies to address problems on the continent. These agencies, many of them still exist today. The Pan-African Telecommunications Union, PATU, the Pan-African Postal Union, the Pan-African News Agency, Union of African National Television and Radio Organizations, Union of African Railways, Organization of African Trade Union Unity, and Supreme Council for Sports in Africa. It was these successes that would serve as inspiration for El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, Brother Omar Wali, Malcolm X Organization of American African Unity. How the Organization of African Unity inspired Malcolm and the OAAU. Following his separation from the Nation of Islam, Malik Shabazz met with President Kwame Nkrumah and returned to the States to establish the OAAU on June 24, 1964 in Harlem, New York. And they show his literature, some of the literature that they had at the time, joining the AAU, the font is so small I can't read it. I can barely read it now, you know. But they had the aims and objectives and the thing when you join, and diagrams about. So yeah, Malcolm X, Malik Shabazz, along with Dr. John Henry Clark, wrote the following into the OAAU Basic Unity Program, the Organization of American African Unity. Restoration. In order to release ourselves from oppression of our captors, our enslavers, then it is absolutely necessary for the American African to restore communications with Africa. I repeat, to restore, restoration, in order to release ourselves from oppression of our captors, the oppressor, the enslavers, then it is absolutely necessary for American Africans to restore communications with Africa. Reorientation. We can learn much about Africa by reading information books. Informative books on Africa and unity and many of our great heroes and sheroes. Education. The Organization for American African Unity will devise original educational materials and methods and procedures which will liberate the minds of our children. We will encourage qualified American Africans to write and publish the textbooks needed to liberate our minds, educating them and our children at home. It's vitally important that happens. I know that a lot of the home situations are not conducive, but it must still happen. I still advocate that we develop that and we educate ourselves at centers and churches, even where halls are. I know right now we're not together. To me, it's really cool if we could just do that through a program that educates our, particularly one segment that would deal with our youth, another segment that deal with young adults, and then older adults. you know, on a constant basis. It can be done through Zoom. Throughout the information across the country, you know, yeah. Yes, economic security. After the Emancipation Proclamation, it was realized that American Africans constituted the largest homogeneous ethnic group with a common origin and a common group experience in the United States. And if allowed to exercise economic or political freedom, would in short period of time own this country. We must establish a technological technician bank. We must do this so that the newly independent nations of Africa can turn to us, who are their brothers and sisters, for the technicians that they will need in the future. We have level. I always say that American Africans, who are the most technologically advanced American Africans on the planet, and if those Africans who had gone through the rigors of study and education, whether it was a trade school, technical school, college, university, whatever expertise they have, and offer it to Africa and work with Africans on the continent. Not like what happened in Liberia. No, that you go there and you think you better than Africans on the continent because you were educated here, or you have light skin, or some bullshit like that. No, go there with your heart and your mind and your hand open, willing to help and develop trade, also willing to develop security and a force to protect it. That's what this whole article is about. The OAU's ineffectiveness and the AU's ineffectiveness was the fact that they don't have a military. They don't have a military to squash what's going on right now in Mali, right now in Ethiopia. If what I've been reading online is true, it's sad. Right now in other parts of Africa, right now in South Africa and in Namibia, right now. At the time of his death, Ilhaj Malik El-Shabazz was working feverishly to establish and promote the young organization, the OAAU. Had the potential to be a grand unifying organization that threatened to bring together American Africans and connect them with African men and women all over the world. Such was the potential and threat that the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, that cross-dressing, J. Edgar Hoover described the nuisance of the Organization for American Unity as a threat to the national security of the United States. It's no wonder then that Ilhaj Malik El-Shabazz was assassinated in the Autobahn ballroom at the inaugural rally of the organization. In fact, exposed the global agenda to prevent the rise of a messiah. We're going to play some of that and read that. The global agenda. Because European dominance is not just the United States. United States is the military. The United Snakes is the military arm of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. They're the military arm. Europe is the executive branch. Okay? Although The Hague is in there, any other, but leading the charge, the Europeans. Although remnants of the organization evolved into the survival programs of the Black Panther Party, the Organization of American African Unity was, as it was, it died with Malcolm. It died with Ilhaj Malik El-Shabazz. For a full program of the Organization of American African Unity, please see or visit MalcolmX.org. That's MalcolmX.org if you want to really check out a lot of the attendance and so forth for the program. The Organization of African Unity became the African Union. Today, the African Union is the present incarnation of Kwame Nkrumah and Rastafari's grand vision. African Union member states cover almost the entire African continent and several African islands. According to the African Union's website, the organization elected its first female leader, Sister Dimanti Zuma, South Africa's Home Affairs Minister. The rise and fall of the most powerful organization in African history, the Organization of African Unity. Voicing concerns over the post-coup crises in Mali is one of the security threats to Africa. Home to the priceless treasures of Timbuktu, the African Union pitched for restoration of the civilian government in the West African nation by July end. So you see, they trying to work on it, but it's crazy. And you got a Muslim group. What happens with a lot of these Muslim groups, and I know, you know, I've had my friend, brother Muhammad Abdullah on the program many times, and we'll hope to have him on many more, you know, and who's a straight ahead Muslim brother who believes in El Islam. But there are, and he recognized there are Muslim groups who have taken whatever and twisted it around, and they feel they got to crush and squash everything that they feel is non-Muslim as a threat. And the fact that they're in Mali at Timbuktu, with all that knowledge that has been there, there are still papyri books or whatever that are there, manuscripts that are there, that they have no respect for, that they are willing to destroy. The AU is now expected to step up efforts to get the Western Regional Bloc, Economic Community of West African States, to support a plan for a possible military intervention in northern Mali, where Islamic militants have seized control and unleashed the destruction of ancient holy shrines and artifacts. The vision of African Union is that of an integrated, prosperous, and peaceful Africa, driven by its own citizens and representing a dynamic force in global arena. Its mission, according to the website, is to become an effective and value-adding institution, driving the African integration and development process in close collaboration with African Union members, states, the regional economic communities, and African citizens. It is up to us as Pan-Africanists to hold the AU to its mission and vision while remaining vigilant against the influence of corruption both inside and outside of the organization. Above all else, we must keep the vision of the Organization of African Unity alive through our works and through our deeds. Ashe. It's important that we do that, because if we don't, who's going to? Exactly. Exactly. If we don't, who's going to do it? It is up to African people. And it's up to African people to make sure that Africans around the globe understand that we are one and to work towards that. I'm going to read the Exposed, the Global Agenda to Prevent the Rise of an African Messiah, when we come back from the break. And then we're going to, you know, take questions. So if you got questions, comments, or concerns, just give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. I know other talk shows ain't talking about these kind of things. I know particularly a lot of talk shows, they're talking about the election. They're talking about all the things that are going to happen with the election and what Biden's going to do and the cabinet he's going to put together. Supposedly it's going to be a very integrated cabinet, you know. You know, one thing, you know what, I tell you, we can be so easily bamboozled, especially the Trump supporters. When you have American Africans who are Trump supporters, these are the most stupid individuals, because they fail to look at, they are pathological, pathologically in denial of reality and history. They are pathologically in denial of reality and history. When they see this man had, he had almost 200 appointments to judgeships, and not one of us. I'm the most, I've done more for blacks. Man, every time he said that stupid, he should have been checked by organizations, individuals, the Congressional Black Caucus, those Negroes. He should have been checked. He has a history. You know, Haj Malik said it best of all our studies. History is best qualified to award our research. Look at the history of Donald Trump. Look at his behavior. Look at the things he's said and done. So we're going to take a break. When we come back from that break, we're going to talk about the global agenda to prevent the rise of an individual or a group. Because, you know, my contention is we don't need a charismatic leader. I love Dr. Clark. Dr. Clark said we need a charismatic program, a program that is agreed upon by all of us. We may put a spokesperson, and if they kill the spokesperson, we get another one. We turn the page, we keep moving. A lot of times when you killed the leader, that they knew that if we could neutralize him or kill him or her, we could squash that movement. And in some ways that has happened. And I'm saying, understand how we have, we know better. We know now. And so what we're going to do is we're going to develop the program that is agreed upon by us in a unified way. And we just keep turning the page as we continue to go to develop the program. Individual leaders, figureheads, chairpersons, all that, they can come and go. But it's the program that must be sustained and maintained and worked towards. And I know as a member of the Pan-African Federalist Movement, I know our contention is we're working to get governments to work together to make that happen. That is the function of the Pan-African Federalist Movement. It's not for people to join the organization. No. Yes, we want you to, but we want all others. And if you are another organization and you agree with that, work with us. Let's work together. That's what bothered me about when we had our meeting last month. Even on that weekend, there were like five other organizations that had something going on, you know? I'm saying we need unity, not fragmentation. We need a solidifying voice. We need to come together and say, this is the demand, and we all agree on that demand. But once we come together like that, we're going to have to defend that demand as well. I just read to you what happened to the OAU. They didn't have ability to enforce anything. What they said was great, but, you know, they didn't have any ability to enforce anything. So you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stick with us because we're going to be right back, okay? Be right here with us. Let's talk about this further.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
on clarinet. Playing on a clarinet, y'all. My name is Ted Herschel.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com. That's Larry Graham, the Jam. Remember when I first heard that, I was at a party. Well, never mind. Anyway, other program we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. This program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia. Followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Kamban and her daughter, Nakati Kamban. And then after that, 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then from 7 to 9 on Thursdays, after 7 with host Shani B. And then Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Friday, 8 p.m. on Friday. And then on Saturday from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturday, Sankofa Elders Council with host Alfonso Watkins. And then on Sunday from 7 until Time for an Awakening, once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. I'm going to take this call. This is Brother. Good afternoon. Caller 602.
Yes, Brother Oshie. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Marcus. Thank you for sending me that text with what's going on. And that's what we're talking about, all the craziness that is happening on the continent. You sent one about what's happening in West Africa. And I know there's some bad problems. Excuse me, you sent me one on East Africa. I was talking earlier about what's happening in West Africa and in Mali, but you were talking about what's happening in Eritrea and Djibouti, and it's just sad and crazy.
Yeah, you see the confusion. Yeah. You see the, as we talk about intensifying African unity, they also talk about they implement their thing. But one thing I want to, you know, that Dr. Kwau, say AU ambassador, the ex-AU ambassador to the US, he said that none of those countries in Africa, with the exception of South Africa, the banks can put any gold reserve, any gold in the vault. And you wonder, then how come we can? Yes, she said it's only in South Africa, a South African bank can put gold in their vault. So we have the wealth, but we can't organize the wealth because of these. You see, what we have to realize, you know, is that all these other ethnic groups work together to keep their feet on our necks. We think it's just the European alone, but they're all in cahoots. They just have different tears that they are at. You see, what we see going on in our local communities with our monies being parted out is the same thing that's operating internationally. See, these people in Africa, these Indians, these Arabs, these other ethnic groups sucking our blood in Africa, they are sucking our blood in our local communities too. You see, it's the same principle going on, the same thing they're doing. So we have, if the AU gonna get strength, if black people gonna get strength, we have to organize our economic life. Because without a way to finance what we're doing, it ain't gonna work. Even the AU itself now, they're saying that the staff is not paid by Africans. It's not, you have African people staffing it, but the payroll is coming from somewhere else. In the AU.
Remember when I did that program on the sister who claims to be a direct descendant of the Queen of Sheba, mm-hmm. and the Arab countries that support her, and exactly. Really they were running it, you know, exactly. And they were talking all about what they can do for Africa. And she was going to other African countries saying pretty much about the unification of Africa, but in a different way, because she was really supporting these Arab countries and European countries. You know, the reality is that, if we don't, a group of us, we don't need the masses. We just need a strong, serious group of us here, the Caribbean and on the continent and anywhere else in the diaspora who wants to join a serious group to make our claim, to state unequivocally to the damn world, we are African people. All y'all folks getting out of here. We will establish our own currency based upon our resources. All this damn, that's why I played that piece by Sister Malence. Malence Burt Williams from Sierra Leone. I love that piece. I never forget when I first heard it, because how smooth she was, how calm she was, and saying to these Caucasians, these crackers, y'all come with this paper money, with all these colored papers, but yet we are the ones with the resources. Exactly. We are the one with the gold and diamonds. We are one with the land. So I'm saying, bump this. Bump this currency. Bump all of this madness. Come together and establish ourselves as African people. It is the only way. The unification of African and African people is the only way. It's the only solution. Yeah. It's Pan-Africanism, or damn it, we're going to perish. If we don't unify, we will die.
So to get that unity, because we have two main problems as a race. We have an economic problem and we have a psychological problem. It's more a psychological problem, though. You see, because if we can organize with our psychological life, then we can solve the economic problem. But so we have to find ways to develop a common cause psychosis amongst the masses. Yeah. So we have to keep doing programs like what you're doing, brother.
You know why, Marcus? That's why I focus every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I focus on this. Because as far as I'm concerned, this is the only subject. Mm-hmm. It's the only conversation that matters. Everything else is moot. African consciousness, African unity is the only thing that matters. It ain't damn voting. It ain't the damn Democratic Party. It ain't Biden, Harris. Ain't none of that shit. African unity is the only thing that matters.
Those people we have to. They are distracted right now. And really right now, we don't need those people to do what we're doing, because that's going to just bring confusion. So we who already have a common cause psychosis have to find a way to organize ourselves and get some some money. Then we could pay some of these damn people.
Yeah. You see? Well, I agree. But you know what? We have the money, but of course we're entrapped. We believe in a society, in individualism. Yeah. So we don't spend money with each other. We're not willing to donate and give to strong causes and organizations and institutions to build and to work on our behalf, because we believe in this madness.
Yeah. You know, a brother, I seen a Muslim brother, and he showed me something. He says, look, brother, you see, if you take a penny and each day, you double that penny.
Yeah.
You know that in 20 days you have around $10,000,
$20,000. Yeah.
A penny.
From a penny.
Penny, brother. If you take that penny and for every day, for 30 days, you keep doubling that penny.
Yeah.
In 20 days, you'd be surprised. By the time it's 30 days, so we can do it. It's just mathematics.
And well, the thing is,
because we ain't stupid. Yeah.
No, but you know what I keep emphasizing? The word I keep emphasizing, even when I talk about at the end of the program, Bibi Fahodie, our victorious destiny. And I emphasize, we will be victorious.
We will win. Telling you.
We will win. It's the will, though. Do we have the will to come together to throw off all the shackles and all of the chains and all of the madness and purge ourselves of all of the ignorance? Do we have it? Do we have the will to do it? I say that we do, but we must exercise it.
No. I'm going to leave you with these words that Marcus Garvey said. He said, when all else fail to organize the people, conditions will. See, conditions right. going to force us
That's
together.
Right.
We
That's
just have
right.
to set up the mechanism in place. When they come, when our people come together, we have to have the mechanism. Because if
That's
not,
right.
you're going to have madness.
Because I have another saying with that, Brother Marcus. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. Conditions.
Exactly, my brother. Thank you for your program, brother.
All right, my brother. Always, man. Appreciate you, Brother Marcus. Thank you. Continue to listen,
you, brother.
Man.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Exposed the global agenda to prevent the rise of an African Messiah. On the they got the this was early October this year. They have a picture of Malcolm killed, Haile Selassie killed, Patrice Lumumba killed, Fred Hampton killed, Muammar Gaddafi killed, Stephen Biko killed, Thomas Sankara killed, Walter Rodney killed. In the past, the Caucasian world has worked hard to prevent the rise of a unified African movement. And any and every charismatic African man or woman was targeted, imprisoned, discredited, deported, or assassinated. From Patrice Lumumba to Marcus Garvey to Kwame Nkrumah to Assata Shakur, African history is filled with examples of potential messiahs, so to speak, who have been neutralized in very public ways. African spies and traitors were used to destroy movements from the inside out. And on a national level, politicians were bribed to maintain the system of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege within their borders. A watershed moment for war on Africans was established of the COINTEL program, counterintelligence, that was formed with one primary objective: to prevent the rise of a new American African Messiah like Marcus Garvey. And you must understand that Marcus Garvey was all that. Anybody who could amass over a million some people, and at that time didn't have Facebook, My Face, Yo Space, none of that, Twitter, no social media, didn't even have the telephone wasn't that prominent. But through the newspaper of the then Negro world, today the African world, he organized. When they had that convention, over 20,000 of our people, 20,000 showed up. Hell, we can't get 200. It's pathetic. The article will discuss exactly how the campaign to prevent African unity and power evolved, and why the world is primed for the rise of a new and more powerful African movement. Early wars against potential messiahs. Early on, the United States government realized that it could not use a blunt force to destroy the ideas of American African self-empowerment. After all, wouldn't that contradict America's own constitution? That's right, to be free. Although the Jamaican-born Garvey might one time had qualified as a radical, Hoover described him as such. He was nonetheless the most prominent African agitator in the world. Under the leadership of the UNIA, the Universal Negro Improvement Association, which to this day remains the largest organization American Africans ever assembled, or Africans ever assembled, grew to the membership of over 3 million souls worldwide. Hoover launched an inquiry into Garvey's activities in August of 1919. This inquiry led to the foundation for which was to become the COINTEL program. The COINTEL program. The first preemptive war against the rise of somebody who would be considered and known and respected as a leader. The COINTEL program. When his investigation came up short, Hoover ordered that the investigation not only be continued but intensified. The UNIA was quickly infiltrated by operatives received specifically for the purpose, and a number of American African informants, or Negroes, were used. 2 years later, the best that the Bureau of Investigation could come up with was for mail fraud. Garvey was then convicted in July of 1923 by an all-Caucasian jury, incarcerated in federal prison here in Atlanta. He was in federal prison here in Atlanta in 19, and then he was deported in 1927. By then, the UNIA had disintegrated, and Hoover had been successful. After his success, the destruction of the UNIA, Hoover vowed to prevent anyone from ever taking Marcus Garvey's place as a so-called Negro Moses. More than 40 years later, he was repeating the same refrain, secretly instructing his COINTELPRO operatives to prevent the rise of a Messiah who would unify and electrify our people, a well-concerted effort and movement of American Africans to improve their socioeconomic and political situations. In 1968, a document contained via the Freedom of Information Act revealed that Hoover thought that El-Hajj, Malik El-Shabazz, Brother Omar Wali, Malcolm X might have been such a Messiah. And that he not, and had he not been murdered, Elijah Muhammad ultimately dismissed as being too old to fill the bill. King nonviolence has too ineffective. And Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, is therefore selected as the most likely candidate and slated for top priority neutralization. Discredit them to destroy them. The Black Panther Party, the war protesters. Discredit them to destroy them, Students for Democratic Society, Young Lords, National Lawyers Guild, the American Indian Movement. Discredit them. Demonize them. You might have already been affected by their campaign to discredit leaders and movements. Have you ever heard of American African man or woman clowning conscious revolutionaries, promoting disunity, and or saying, we don't need no black movement. We need a spiritual movement. If so, you might be implicated in a campaign to discredit American African consciousness and American African conscious leaders. Discrediting one's opponent is a well-known political strategy. Here's how it works. By discrediting an individual or their reason for fighting, members of the organization begin to view their leaders or their reason for fighting in a more negative or irrelevant light. Eventually, the will to fight will be eroded and faith in the leader will be diminished. Discrediting a leader, organization, or a cause does not come directly from the individual organization attacking it. For instance, politicians use super PACs, political action committees that they are legally allowed to raise and spend unlimited amounts of money for the sole purpose of supporting or opposing political candidates. With a super PAC engaged in mudslinging, dirty politics, otherwise unethical behavior, the politician may keep his hands clean while discrediting his opponent. And you're seeing that going on here in Georgia. I've been seeing this, damn it, since March of this year. I've been seeing it all this year. I'm so tired of this. And especially these ones against Raphael Warnock. That long-haired heifer, Kelly Loeffler, has been putting out. She's just totally racist. You know, but all of these things, especially when it comes to us, discrediting us, you know, this is how it works. It's the dirty politics. And so you may, you know, Super PAC may claim that, you know, they're independent, but basically what they're doing is working on behalf of that more than likely Republican candidate. Likewise, politicians or organizations that seek to prevent the rise of a unified American African movement will use the media, other organizations, and other influential individuals to discredit, distract, and destroy their opponent. Real world examples. By studying the techniques with which the counterinsurgencies, wars against the party was waged, we can collectively begin to devise the ways and means by which to counter them, offsetting and eventually neutralizing their effectiveness. Here are three real world examples of each technique used against American African movements, black politicians. To prevent the political empowerment of the American African masses, politicians have been manipulated, bribed, and turned into puppets to Caucasian agenda. The policies of previous American presidents like Barack Obama supporting the war on Libya. That's why I'm saying, man, you know, if you might see Barack Obama, and of course he's been on a lot this last few weeks, especially all day yesterday, you know, I keep thinking of the blood on his hands of Muammar Gaddafi. That's one of the real ones, because what Muammar Gaddafi was planning to do was to unify Africa and use a gold coin, which is a currency that Africans could have used to get themselves out of the situation that we are in economically. To prevent the political empowerment of the African masses, politicians have been manipulated, bribed, or turned into puppets. The policies of previous American president, Obama, supporting the war on Libya, AFRICOM, which has multiple bases in Africa. AFRICOM is all over the, I think they have like 30-something bases. School closings, privatizations, bank bailouts, prosecuting whistleblowers, shielding banksters, and illegally using drones and missiles to assassinate American citizens, and more right-wing than many of the policies passed by his predecessors. Got to get it together here. AFRICOM, the secret military organization destroying Africa from the inside out. Over 400 years, Africa has bled under the skies of fighting terrorism with the rise of Chinese neocolonialism. AFRICOM stands to gain and continue the trend. Barack Obama is not the only American African politician to held liable for our political disenfranchisement. This article from Black Agenda Report sums it up best. Black Agenda Report. The new American African politicians drape themselves in kente cloth every now and then, and they remember King's birthday and American African History Month. They come together to celebrate and congratulate each other frequently at occasions like the Congressional Black Caucus Annual Legislative Conference. But their politics, American African policies and politics, haven't been reinvented. They have been compromised, hijacked, and colonialized and colonized. American African politicians isn't about addressing American African unemployment, which is at levels not seen in 70 years. It's not about the catastrophic fall in American African family wealth that has resulted from the foreclosures epidemic, also disproportionately concentrated in American African neighborhoods. American African politics isn't about addressing the issues of mass incarceration, which has shredded our families and futures. American African politics isn't about stopping the wave of foreign wars, which King a generation ago called a demonic suction tube, draining resources away from the programs for human needs. There is no room for any of these concerns in today's American African politics. All that's left is re-electing an American African president, protecting him and the First Lady from insults, and shoring up the careers of American African mayors and congresspersons. All that and getting paid. American African politics is over, at least until the day when enough of us walk out of the Democratic Party to build something new, something that does not yet exist. And he has a website, a piece that you can go check out on Cory Booker and Hard Right's Colonization of American African Politics. Today we see the rise of a new suspect in the political movements like ADOS. ADOS. That's the organization that called itself in for the reparations, that only American African get reparations, the descendants of slaves, the American descendants of slaves. God, I hate that. I even hate to say it. I just could say ADOS. In America, in grassroots organizing, encouraging American African groups not to vote in places like Guyana. We also see suspects uprisings that lead to the overthrow of Pan-African leaders who refuse to be used and abused. Remember Gaddafi, Mugabe, Nkrumah, Lumumba, Sankara? Yeah. Number two, suspect organizations. The National Association for the Advancement of Colored People was actually founded by wealthy European Jews and Caucasian philanthropists. Over 113 years, the association has tried to control the political and social conversation of American African population at large. Marcus Garvey was very successful in all of his goals until he aroused jealousy from the Negroes in America who wanted to integrate with Caucasians. Garvey's foremost enemy was Du Bois of the NAACP, who called Garvey a black gorilla and led the campaign to have him deported. He had a campaign called the Garvey Must Go campaign. Today, the NAACP proves detrimental to American African men and women. For instance, on May 19, 2012, the board of the NAACP endorsed marriage equality in a near unanimous vote by the 64-member board. Only two members voted against the resolution. When asked if the organization is worried about the backlash from American Africans who are religiously based, Ben Jealous pushed back on the notion that the movement for marriage equality excludes religious people. I would like to point out that many of us are religiously based, Ben Jealous stated. We do this work because of our faith, not in spite of it. With that said, our calling as an organization is to defend the U.S. Constitution. We are here to speak to matters of civil law and matters of civil rights. Okay. Leaders of the NAACP have no illusion about their federally funded organization's mission to support the United States Constitution and its government above the advancement of people of color. But they are, particularly us, but they are not the only ones. Some well-known so-called American African organizations have advanced shedding blood for the same nation that places them under mass surveillance. One organization is the Nubian Moors. Can't get that out. The United Nubian Moors. Taken from part three of the United of their constitution, this portion gives account of what Nubian Moor citizens can do insofar as the organization. We may join, this is what it says, we may join the Boy Scouts of America and the Girl Scouts. We can join the cadets, drum and bugle corps, cheerleaders and majorettes, any sorority or fraternity that you investigate and find are not anti-government or dangerous. You can join the military, the fire department, police department, any lodges that you investigate, or organizations for the support of welfare of those in need. Don't join any organization that is racist or any religious group or organization that teaches hate. If you fight in defense of any other country, let it be the United States of America. The screenshot above was taken from guidelines that were governed the United Nubian Nations of Moors, an organization created by the cult leader, Malachi York. Dwight York. I don't know if some of my listeners remember that. I'm quite sure there's going to be a few. Hijacking the military. Excuse me, not the military. Hijacking the media. The use of entertainment has been a well-known weapon of mass distraction, with the American African mind and body enslaved to carnal pleasures and entertainment. The soul and intellect cannot be stirred to revolution because you're too busy shaking your ass. How many American African celebrities become weapons in the war on American African culture? Cultural rebels have been used as weapons to control the hearts and mind of our people. Here's how those silent weapons have been used to wage quiet wars. You may not personally listen to these cartoon characters, but your children do. These children will grow up with the seeds of ignorance planted within them and they would be even more disinterested in participating in anything associated with African consciousness. The secret psychological war on American African men and women via the media and hip hop is covered in detail in the Psychological Covert War on Hip Hop by Professor Griff. Get it, read it, discuss it, teach it. The weapons being used against us have grown ever more sophisticated. Our people are less than willing to fight for themselves than ever before. And our conditions continue to deteriorate. Meanwhile, the FBI in the United States has launched COINTEL 2.0. That's right. The FBI, the COINTEL 2.0, by labeling American Africans as identity extremists. We're going to play this piece. It's not very long. So we'll play this piece.
The report identified black identity extremists as a threat to law enforcement. Critics say the report is eerily similar to the FBI's 20th century counterintelligence program.
COINTELPRO was an FBI operation established in the 50s by J. Edgar Hoover to target African Americans who were fighting for justice and equality. He targeted Dr. King, he targeted Malcolm X, and over 80% of the targets of COINTELPRO were members of the Black Panther Party.
At the height of COINTELPRO, activists and community organizers were targeted. These include current Congressional Black Caucus members like John Lewis, Bobby Rush, Emmanuel Cleaver, and Barbara Lee.
The church committee in the mid-70s held hearings and determined that many of the actions and activities of COINTELPRO were really unconstitutional.
What you describe is a series of illegal actions intended squarely to deny First Amendment rights to some Americans. How shall we ensure that it never happened again?
One of the similarities that I see are that it's based on race. You know, COINTELPRO definitely targeted African Americans. Black identity extremists, which Attorney General Jeff Sessions has put out, targets African Americans. When it was brought to our attention, we immediately contacted the FBI director and had a very forthright meeting. I specifically asked him, how do they identify black identity extremists? Who are they? And there was no answer to that. We still don't know who's a black identity extremist.
A lot of activists around the country are very concerned that we're getting ready to repeat a very sad chapter of our history, where people who are rightfully protesting what they consider to be an injustice in their community, which is their relationship with police officers, are now being targeted and labeled as extremists and are going through periods of surveillance and harassment.
As a community worker, I attended many Black Panther Party functions. I was part of the breakfast program. We registered many people, the African-American community and others, to vote. Well, the FBI during COINTELPRO would try to turn members of the Black Panther Party against each other. Agent provocateurs were placed within the party to try to sow dissent.
I was the coordinator of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party in the summer of 1969. Brad Hampton and Mark Clark, two members of the Black Panther Party, were murdered. And they put an informant, William O'Neill, and planted him inside the Panther Party.
We could mourn today, but if we understood, Fred, that we are dedicated, that his life wasn't given in vain.
The national director of the FBI said that the Black Panther Party was the number one threat to national security of this nation. And that created the condition for law enforcement agents all across this nation to go after Panther. That program that they did, in some sense, we ought to be thankful for. Because that put in writing for everybody to see. We're still in the eyes of so many, nothing but a bunch. Was I surprised? No. I fully expected it to happen. Now the question is, how do we deal with it?
people need to get to their members of Congress and get them a copy of this report and hold their members of Congress accountable. In this day and time, they could really stop and halt the progressive movements that are taking place in the country. And I think with Black Lives Matter, with the Dreamers, with all of our millennials and what they're doing, they deserve to be out there and to protest and to engage in petitioning their government to right the wrongs of the past. Those of us who've been around, who saw COINTELPRO, really know the risks and the dangers. And so I hope that people really believe us that this happened, because this is COINTELPRO 2.0.
Yeah, COINTELPRO 2.0, huh? Yeah. And China, the same nation responsible for imprisoning more than 1 million Muslims in international concentration camps, is exporting its security system to Zimbabwe so that dictators can do the same thing to dissenting populations within their borders. Also, you can read about China will use millions of Zimbabwe citizens to improve their facial recognition accuracy. You know, they scan your face. We have reached the beginning and a tipping point when American African men and women the world over will unite into Garvey's racial hierarchy, or to be subject to the personally ascended system of Caucasian power and African subjugation. We owe it to ourselves to abolish the predators here and now, or rapidly as possible, enduring whatever sacrifice we must do to achieve the visions of Malcolm, Marcus, Nkrumah, Kwame Ture, Huey Newton. Today, the United States of Africa is possible, as it is necessary to rise of an African Messiah. But rather than that Messiah coming into form of a single person or a single woman, if things continue, we may see the rise of an entire nation of them. If leaders of the past were able to change the world on their own, what might 1 million of them be able to do to achieve this? Conditions for African people today are worse than they were when the Black Panther Party was formed back in 1966. American Africans in the main continue to live in poverty. Disproportionately percentage of American disproportionately percentage of us die from AIDS and, of course, COVID-19, cancer. As American African infant mortality rates continue to be double that of Caucasians, there is a desperate need for liberation agenda. The Black Panther Party set the example, exposing principles and a history that certainly should be embraced by all those who struggle for freedom, the Huey P. Newton Foundation. The Caucasian world has worked hard in the past to crush African movements. Maybe if they work harder at justice and equality instead of surveillance and oppression, that they would have a less fear. No, brothers and sisters, that is what it is. They do what they do. They do what they do. We have a caller, 646-646. Good afternoon.
Yeah, what's happening, Ochi? What's going on, bro?
I'm doing fine, Brother Jay. How are you?
Doing good, man. I can't complain. Listen, I did not know that Filthy Uda was on the scene for that long.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man, he was one.
No, about 50 years, man, 40, 50 years. Yes. Yeah.
Whoa.
That's why they had that building named after him and everything, man. You know, he was around. He was the guy that put together the Untouchables, the G-Men, the government men, to squash, you know, the bootleggers and Capone and so forth in the Roaring Twenties. Yes. J. Edgar Hoover, all the way into damn near 70s, almost all into the 70s. And he had dirt on national figures as well as some local figures if they had prominence. He found out dirt. In fact, even though he was a closet cross-dresser and he had a male companion with him, some young dude that I remember. And if you, there's a movie, J. Edgar Hoover, with Leonardo DiCaprio playing J. Edgar Hoover. And they kind of go through a little bit of that, you know. But, yeah. Yeah.
Man,
and also, too, Jay, there was a sister. I was at some conference, you know, other than going to these damn conferences with the firefighters and anything else, all these other organizations I've been involved in. Well, I've even gone to some NAACP conferences because I used to be involved with them. But anyway, there was a sister who claimed that she was a relative of J. Edgar Hoover, that J. Edgar Hoover had some American African in his. That's not surprising, of course, but, you know, something that I'm quite sure that he would acknowledge, you know, but had something in his immediate family. You know, that's the same thing with Eisenhower. Supposedly Eisenhower's mama was a high yellow sister. That's supposed. See, but of course, you know, they're not going to acknowledge that, you know. So,
but it's just amazing to think that he had that type of influence in a career,
yeah,
over a span of 50 years. And when you think about it, it don't even dawn on you. Because when you said about Marcus Garvey, and then I'm saying he was messing with King. I mean, like, whoa.
Yeah.
This guy was really in the tentacles of American society to the level, like you said, he probably had dirt on everybody.
Yeah, and he did. That was his whole thing, man. That was his whole thing, to get some dirt on you, plant something on you, whatever, you know, to neutralize you, you know, because he was,
but
he was, it was he,
with King, though.
Yeah, it was he who was sending those letters to Claretta and tapings of Dr. King with other women. It was J. Edgar Hoover, you know.
You know, it's funny you say that about the outside shenanigans of men and their women. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, let's be honest, man. You know, I think Coretta King wasn't happy about what Martin was doing. But look, man, she knew what he was doing. I mean, come on, bro. I mean, you know, I always laugh when I hear people talk about, you know, stars and athletes and things like that, mm-hmm, about how, you know, they don't cheat and all of that stuff. And, you know, one time I was a chauffeur, so I had an opportunity to deal with a lot of entertainers. And believe me, man, 90% of them was out there cheating on their wives, man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, cats who you think,
yeah,
wouldn't. Who, you know, they've been with their wives for 40 and 50 years. They cheating on their wives. It's just a matter of discretion involved. And those that do it, you know, let the women know straight up, hey, listen, you know, I'm not leaving my wife for you. And I think that, you know, some women go along with it because of the benefits that's involved with the lifestyle, man. And I've seen it. So, I mean, I always laugh about it. You know what I mean? Because I've been in situations where I've seen and heard people get in debates about how, oh, he wouldn't do that to his wife and he wouldn't do that to his girlfriend and blah, blah, blah. And I was with the clown like a month or two before that, driving them to a hotel or picking them up from a hotel. And I'm like, whoa. You know what I mean? But,
yeah,
you know, you got, when you get to a certain level like that, you got to be discreet. Like, I got friends of mine who are bodyguards. And, you know, man, they, you know, we laugh about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's like, life is kind of funny, man, because, you know, we put people on pedestals that in all actuality shouldn't be on pedestal and should be appreciated for what they've done and what they do. You know what I mean? And it's like you were saying with you having a meeting with the federal organization and you got five other groups having meetings at the same time or around the same time and on the same day. Those things shouldn't be happening, man.
Yeah, they really shouldn't. I agree with it.
Be honest about it.
Yeah, because we need functional unity. We need to say that regardless, I'm I'm willing to subordinate myself for the good of the whole. It is all about us being collective and developing that collective voice, that one voice. And I ain't talking about just here in America. I'm talking about globally. Because our problem is a global situation. Yeah, exactly. Our problem is global. You know?
Yeah, because I think we right now are facing our biggest challenges than we have ever imagined, because the resources in the world are dwindling and the players at the top are changing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, I always say to people, if you don't understand your priorities, you're just not going to go along with what's in the best interest of the collective. It's just like you look at these farmers that voted for this nitwit that's in office, and now 4 years later,
right,
they done got screwed.
Right.
It, the same, and they want to vote for them again.
Yeah, the same thing. The same thing with mine workers.
Is it based on whiteness?
Yeah.
Or the perception that now they're going to do, now the right person is going to do right by you. So, I mean, it just goes to show your ignorance and stupidity, because think about this. All of those soybean farmers that were destroyed by this guy with this tariff situation with the Chinese, who then went to Brazil and other places to replace what was taken away from them, in a sense, from America. Did America go to other places and open up new opportunities for those farmers? I mean, think about that. Because the job of America is supposed to be able to export the product from America into other territories. And it just, it's not happening. So, you know, those are the little things that we don't understand and we don't see when you talk about trade agreements and things of that nature. What are you as a country exploiting around the world and opening up opportunities for your citizens to be able to, you know, exploit around the world? America just isn't doing it, man. They just constantly being the consumer instead of the producer of global materials. And if you notice, China's doing it, Brazil's doing it, Germany's doing it, Russia's doing it, and who are those that are doing it? The BRIC nations.
Well, let me just say this.
We don't get it.
Let me just say this, Jay. I just look at, you know, I would like to, you know, in one sense, say that the world should come together, because it is the world that is being adversely affected, and the people and all life on the planet, plant life, animal life, sea life, all is all in peril to some degree because of selfishness and greediness and nationalities and all that kind of. We have one planet with diminishing resources. I focus on Africa because I think that Africa must get itself together first, you know, before it can help anybody else. But because of the constant interpolation of African by Europeans, by Indians, by Koreans, Chinese, and you name it, you know, and the fact that they have these factions and these wars going on, some conflict in the West, in Mali, some conflict in the East with Ethiopia and Eritrea and so forth. This is ridiculous. The constant conflict in the southern part of Africa, the ignorance that is spreading in the northern part of Africa with the Arabs and neutering our brothers in Libya and still have enslavement of Africans in Mauritania. It's madness, it's crazy, and there's no statesmanship, because if there was a true United Nations, it's not about any one group. It's, in fact, it is really about how can we improve the earth for humanity and the future. How can we come to grips now with climate change? Climate change is real. Climate change is real. And if you don't believe that shit, because look what's happening right now. There's a damn storm that just hit the Yucatan Peninsula last week. And here comes another one. And it's going to be just as vicious or even more so. Going to hit Nicaragua. I mean, you know, and it'll probably swing up and once again hit into the Gulf and blast Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and have some effect here, even here in Atlanta. It's real. But yet, you know, they still don't want to do what's necessary to change it, because you have a 1% of a 10% of people who run the world. Of that 1%, these are the multi-billionaires. Some of these individuals have created a security force around them as they continue to extract greed. In fact, during this pandemic, the people who made the most money are those people. While many people lost jobs, businesses closed, lost livelihoods, some people are now experiencing all kind of anguish, all kind of psychological problems. But yet, here during this so-called pandemic, the people aren't coming together to do what is necessary to squash it. Whether it is humanly made.
You can't get the government to do it.
Huh?
You can't even get the government to come together to give the people stimulus checks to help them out. I mean, you know, there was an article in the paper today talking about unemployment is running out for people here in my state. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are suffering. I mean, there's a lot of people suffering that, you know, we don't even understand.
Right.
I know I deal with it, with dealing with people that I'm dealing with.
Right.
The problem is nobody's talking about it. Everybody's talking about this idiot and, you know, is he going to give it up?
Or is he going to make a concession speech?
Thinking about what Biden's gonna do for the communities and things of that nature, what he said he's gonna do.
Yeah.
I mean, we just in a real serious situation that if we just, as African people, came together and looked out for one another, we could probably collectively place ourselves in a better position than waiting for this white man to do it.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, listen, I gotta go. It's that time.
Brother,
the clock's on
have
the wall.
A beautiful day.
Man, you too, Jay. I appreciate you, man. You have a blessed day, man. Hope to see you on Wednesday. Lewis Hamilton. Lewis Hamilton made history. Formula One race car driver, one of the youngest. He surpassed Schumacher. Brother Paul mentioned him some months ago. And also, too, if Brother Paul is listening, yes, Lewis Hamilton, he's from the UK. And also, too, Brother Bada, his video. Anyway, I'm going to play it on Wednesday. But, yes, hats off to Lewis Hamilton. In fact, I was reading a piece about the brother, and there was a lot of backlash because he is a brother. And he has beaten all these other Caucasians in Formula One race car. It's just like the Indy cars, just like the Indianapolis 500 cars. Formula One racer, Lewis Hamilton. He is the record holder, the record breaker. We end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they shown the hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Always put emphasis on that word will. Will of you mighty people, you can accomplish what you will. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Hope to see you on Wednesday. Peace, family.